Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power, but it's more than that today. It is the power of magic. Oh, yes. I am so delighted that we are going to have a gentleman, Milt Larson, whose life, well, my goodness, if you read his book, My Magical Journey, the first 30,000 days, it's just, oh, my gracious, it's absolutely wondrous. And that is what magic is all about. Milt Larson, welcome to the show.
Oh, what a great pleasure talking to you. It's and you know, when we say 30,000 days, that's a long time.
But what I'm amazed is what you have compressed in those 30,000 days.
Well, when I could never figure out what I was doing, so I had to do a lot.
Well, you know, I had to chuckle because I came across a quote by Norman Vincent Peale. He said, if you put off everything until you're sure of it, you'll get nothing done. Holy Moses.
The things that
you've done, besides being a pack rat of memorabilia and having all kinds of dreams, and I loved it when I found out that Walt Disney was the person that you wanted to emulate, a man of vision and dreams who is called crazy for wanting to build something called Disneyland out in the middle of God knows where in California, which, believe it or not, there was that attitude at one time.
And, he was considered moderately insane because at the time he built Disneyland, the freeways didn't go all that far, and it was out in a bunch of orange groves and things, and people thought he was nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working at that time, and I don't think this is in the book, so I might as well start a new book. But I was working for doing some ideas for Pacific Ocean Park, which was a CBS run theme park on the ocean, and they thought that this Ocean Park was the biggest success in the entire history of the world, and Disney is out building this stupid park in
mm-hmm.
Anaheim. And as it turned out, the Ocean Park was a terrible flop, and Disney was a terrible success. That's the way life is, you know.
And that is show business. Show business is an ever-changing, ongoing situation, but your life started in show business. You were born to a couple that your dad was a criminal attorney but had this passion for magic. Your mother had a passion for it. She was gorgeous. And here you come into this world in a time when Hollywood was just a little bit of a something going on, and the world of magic. Oh, my goodness. I think the kids of today, if they could hear of your story, what it was like for you growing up, they'd say, wow, can't we go back and play? Just tell us a little bit about your growing up in the world and the world of magic.
Well, the thing is, you know, talking about kids today and kids of yesterday and everything, I think if anything, when I was born, which is, count up the 30,000 days. it adds up. I just had my 82nd birthday, kids of that time, it was such an innocent time. You know, I mean, we were able to drink water out of hoses and put mercury on our coins and everything, and not worry too much about, you know, when you were going to get run over by a lead-licking paint off of walls and everything. But other than that, it was kind of the old movie of the girl next door, and everything was pretty innocent and everything. And, you know, it's changed a little bit now because the computer age and everybody, you know, I think sadly I was at a dinner thing the other day and there were four people all texting each other. I hope they weren't texting each other at the table, but they were, you know, not talking to each other, just having a good time. So times do change. But I grew up in a time when having my father and mother, my dad was a very successful criminal attorney, and my mother was a very successful wife of my father. But she loved magic, and he loved magic. Together, they started the magazine of magic. So I grew up surrounded by magicians, and to this day, I'm still surrounded by magicians. You know, last night we had about 300 people at the Magic Castle, and they're all, I would like to consider them my family. You know, we have 5,000 members in the club, so it's a big family. But
yes,
at any rate, I grew up in this wonderful world of fantasy and you know, kind of always, when you say I admired, which I did, Walt Disney, is to him, to me, you know, he always did family entertainment, and, you know, it was a thing to go to a Disney picture. You never... Now, as a child, you don't care what it is, except my family would always say, "Well, let's go see Snow White," you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so I grew up when we were. My dad gave up the practice of law in the mid-30s to take the family out and entertain people as the Larson family of magicians. And my mother and dad did, sold as a lecture rather than as a show, because this was in the middle of the Depression. And my dad figured out that the wealthy people still had money. I mean, those that didn't lose everything in the Depression. And there were still resort hotels and people would do it, but just they didn't want to be seen as enjoying vaudeville and enjoying themselves that much. They kind of preferred to watch entertainment as lectures. So,
Dad
took the show, our show, the Larson Family of Magicians. It was called The Cultural Background of Magic, and basically it was a magic show, and Dad and Mother would do it, and Bill and I, my late brother Bill and I would do our little bits and things, but we performed as a total entertainment, but it was all billed as a lecture, okay. Educational. So then the people didn't mind doing that. So I grew up in a wonderful world of magic, and also we'd play these beautiful resort hotels, you know, in Southern California, Coronado down in San Diego, and Del Monte up in Carmel, up in Monterey. And so I grew up in these palaces, and I think that's where I got the feeling that someday I'd like to have a castle of my own. And
amazing.
So it was a great, great upbringing, and I got to, you know, enjoy the art of performing, and I guess that's about it, you know.
Well, not only that, but you became a very skilled carpenter when you were growing up. You found you had a knack of working with wood and designing things, and all of this was to come in handy later. Now, one of the points of historical information, and your book is loaded with historical information, Houdini. Who has not heard about the famous Houdini? Well, there's a beautiful photograph, and that's another joy with your book, are all of the photographs that are here within its content. A book of you, a picture of you, excuse me, it's titled Little Milt and Bessie Houdini. And
oh, yeah.
You have a section in here on how she dedicated a crystal ball, I believe it was, from Henry Houdini. And for 10 years every year after the man died, there was a seance held to see if Houdini was going to come back afterwards, mm-hmm. communicate with her. And
yeah,
he died on Halloween, according to what your story is. But there was something special that happened at the Knickerbocker Hotel. What happened?
Well, it's a fabulous story because he died on Halloween 1926. And Harry Houdini and his wife, Beatrice, he was always interested in the idea of is there a way of communicating after death, beyond death, you know. And and so he spent a great deal of his life exposing fraudulent mediums. And he said that anything they could do to prove that they're bringing somebody back after life, he could duplicate with magic. And he did. If they had, and there, at that time, they were terrible and probably still might be people that profess to contact the past, the unliving people, and but they would do things like floating tables and wrapping doors and everything like that. And he said anything that they do, he could do, and he did. So when he passed away in 1926, he and Beatrice had made a pact that whoever died first would make a serious effort to come back and prove to somebody that they were returning from the dead. And to that end, they had a key word that only the two of them knew. And therefore, if you did come back, okay, what is the word? And nobody could ever do that. So after they died, Beatrice Houdini, on the anniversary of his death, every year for 10 years, had a seance where they tried to bring back Houdini. And seances were held all over the world on that date to see if they could contact Houdini. And the key to it was the word, you know. And and nobody ever did it. And for 10 years, they had what they called the final Houdini seance. And that was the thing. If they couldn't do it after 10 years, forget it and things. So, and my dad and mother were at that seance. And dad was Mr. Houdini's attorney at that point. And that was 10 years after Houdini died. But they had a seance on the roof of the Knickerbocker Hotel, which was at that time a very fashionable hotel in Hollywood. And it's not a New York high-rise. It was like about a 10-story building. But anyhow, it had a roof, and they put bleachers on the roof and had the seance. And cajoled a fellow by the name of Dr. Ed Saint, who was the medium in that case, or the conductor of the seance. And they had a bell on the table and a tambourine, and my dad and a fellow by the name of Dr. D. Galini said, let's at least liven this thing up a little bit and, you know, have a produce a dove or do something. And Mrs. Houdini would have none of that. She said, no, it has to be very legit, and either he comes back or he doesn't, you know. And so at the end of the seance, he didn't come back, and he didn't ring the bell, and he didn't shake the tambourine, and that was about it. But at the very end of the seance, and there's a recording of Mrs. Houdini, so she said, I reverently turned out the light. There was a little altar with a light that had burned for 10 years, and she turned off the light or blew it out or whatever that is. And at that moment, it rained, and it was a clear night in Hollywood, October 31st, 1936, and it showered just long enough to dampen everybody on the roof of the Knickerbocker and send them scampering away. And the interesting thing is that it only rained in Hollywood. It didn't rain anyplace else, and the cloud moved off and went. So the people that said Houdini could come back said, would he come back and ring bells and shake tambourines, or would he come back in some natural form like rain? And so after 10 years, they said, did he come back or didn't he come back?
So the question
is
still there.
It's a marvelous story, but it's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm. Why did it rain only on the Knickerbocker Hotel, which is fabulous? Now, you are an avid collector.
You have
collected memorabilia since you were just a little boy. I don't know how you were able to store all of this stuff, because you took items from old buildings. You took the inside of old theaters, the entire guts of the theater. Mm-hmm. You would take it and you would store it, and you had people that were supportive of this. But let's go into, for a moment, the Magic Castle, because people around the world, like you said, you've got over 5,000 members. The love of magic is just as strong today as it was when you were a child. And
it's even stronger, probably.
Yeah, famous people like Cary Grant, Johnny Carson, so many, many famous people in Hollywood and of different professional status levels and economic station would just love coming into the environment. Now, the Magic Castle today, where is it located? Because people, if they're going to be doing their travels, they can always go to California. Where is it in California?
Well, it's an amazing place because, in the first place, it is Hollywood, California, and everybody knows Hollywood. But what they don't realize in Hollywood is Hollywood is basically originally just a ranch land. I have an old theatrical guidebook, and it says Hollywood is a railroad stop 5 miles from Los Angeles. And that's about it. But in 1905, it was pretty much just orange groves and ranches and things. And the Magic Castle is a wonderful 1910 mansion, and it's only one block north, for people all over the country. North is where the hill is in Hollywood, and that's only one block from Hollywood Boulevard, where the Walk of Star or Walk of Fame is, and the Academy Awards Theater and Roosevelt Hotel and Ramen's Chinese, and we're only one block away, but it's on a hill, and at that time they were all residential houses. Max Sennett had his house up there, and the fellow that wrote L. Frank Baum, who wrote Wizard of Oz, was across the street, and that was the kind of residential neighborhood that it was. And this one old house, after Hollywood developed, was still there, part of a complex on the hill. So it's always surprising to find the one block off of Hollywood and Highland is this grand old mansion, which we turned into a castle in 1963. But originally it was a residence, and built as a residence. And at that time, it was about a 6,000-square-foot house, which was pretty big for those days. And it's a three-story house. But it looks like the architecture is what they call French chateau architecture. And it is, so it looks sort of like a castle. It has turrets and towers and things, and certainly not like anything in Hollywood. And today's Hollywood, and so we I was very lucky. I was lucky enough. 50 years ago, we just had our 50th anniversary at the castle, and I was able to make a deal with the owner of the property, and he liked the idea of doing what I said I could do, and that's history 50 years ago. But it was such a natural, the house itself at that time looked like it fell out of a Charles Adams cartoon. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you know, you kind of imagine there's somebody up in the tower pouring boiling oil off the tourist or something, you know. And the time I got it, it was kind of run down and had weeds in the what used to be the front lawn. And the owner of the property really, he didn't want to tear it down, but he also didn't exactly know what to do with it. So I came along, and as you mentioned earlier, all my life, my grandfather was a master carpenter, and I think a lot of my genes came after him because I love carpentry, I love building things, and I always have. And my brother used to call me Mrs. Winchester because it's a house up in San Jose, San Francisco area, where the Winchester Arms air was sold by a medium that the you know, the spirits would get her if she ever stopped building, so she never stopped. And this house rambles on with stairways that don't go anyplace and windows that go into brick walls. And and so my brother used to call me, Brother Melt is nuts, you know. He's always building things. And that's pretty true. To this day, 50 years later, I'm still, yesterday morning, I was out in our shop here building stuff. So it's I love it. You know, it's fun.
Well, the place is just gorgeous. And, of course, you have had some other facilities, too, or memorabilia that you have collected through the years. There's a photo of you when you were younger with an old gramophone. Just so many different things, and so many famous people were very supportive of you. It's like Cary Grant coming out and having dinner.
Well, I grew up, you know, my family, my dad and mother, and magicians were very friendly with, at the time when I was a kid, you know, there was a magicians organization in Hollywood called Los Magicos, and it was kind of an exclusive group of people, but names that probably wouldn't mean too much to people today, but people like Chester Morris, who is Boston Blackie in the films, and of course Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, and Edgar Bergen was a wonderful magician as well as a ventriloquist. And Harold Lloyd, we would have meetings in his big mansion in Beverly Hills. So I kind of grew up in that environment. And when I was a young person, you know, it was my dad had a magic store after World War II where you couldn't travel. We had to settle down, and we have this beautiful theater in our backyard, and people like Orson Welles and Harold Lloyd and people like that would frequent the thing. So I grew up with a lot of celebrity friends, and so when we opened the castle, it was kind of natural that those people that were interested in, you know, Orson Welles had his own, during World War II, he had a fundraising show for the servicemen with a tent in Hollywood, and his assistants, he did marvelous magic. He did big illusions in this it was called the Mercury Wonder Show, but his assistants were people like Joseph Cotten and Rita Hayworth and Marlena Dietrich. Those were just getting sawed in half and all that kind of stuff. So I just grew up in a celebrity world, and then my brother and I both went into television. He was a staff producer at CBS, and I was the writer for Truth or Consequences when what daytime with Bob Barker, and so those celebrity friends kind of followed on over to the castle too. So and the castle to this day, you know, the celebrities back when we first opened were people like Orson Welles and Johnny Carson and Cary Grant and Jimmy Stewart and people like that. And today our members are people like Nicolas Cage and Johnny Depp and Steve Valentine. You know, today's stars are still part of the Magic Castle. And I think there's something about magic. You know, acting in film or movies or television or any of those things, it's all an illusion, you know. I mean, you transport your persona to another world. You know, people, if Johnny Depp can be a pirate one day and a comedian the next day, that's kind of magical, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's very, very magical. Milt, I wanted to bring up the fact that when you decided that the memorabilia you had collected, it was very, very significant. And in the 60s and 70s, a lot of the magnificent old buildings, the old theaters, because vaudeville mm-hmm. had been gone for a while, so much had changed, technology was evolving in its own way. It was a different world. And you had the wisdom to keep your eyes open for places that were just spectacular. I think of here in the Tacoma, Washington area, we have a theater, the Pantages Theater. Well, this was built by a tremendously well-known architect, and to preserve it, it took the volunteer efforts of thousands of people here in the area and, you know, getting in, cleaning things up, preserving it, and today it is just, it's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. And when I was going through your book and I was reading your information, so many of the pieces of memorabilia, including the entire inside of an old, old theater, you preserve these because it was an art form and beautiful, beautiful things, chandeliers, all kinds of stuff put into storage so you could put them someday, someplace. And by golly, you've done that.
Well, you know, it's funny because going back again to when I was a kid, and we played these beautiful resort hotels, and my brother and I didn't know there was a right-hand side of a menu for years. I mean, you know, where the prices are, because we're always the honored guests of people in these palatial places. And so I kind of like that part. I always said that, you know, I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth, but it wasn't ours. You know, it was on loan. But at any rate, I think that's where I did it. And then as a teenager, we worked midnight spook shows with a fellow by the name of Dr. Zom. It sounds terrible, but those were the thing. And those shows were weekends, and we'd play these beautiful old vaudeville theaters that had been closed for years, but they'd open them up for special events. And so I'd go backstage and find boxes full of old programs and things and ask the theater manager, you know, what are you going to do? Oh, kid, take them, you know, have a good time. So a lot of that's kind of started thing. And when I was in high school, I was a stage manager at Los Angeles High School, and we did a show called Big Bailey, and everybody knows that show, you know, My Fair Lady, later, George Bernard Shaw. But anyway, there was one thing in that play that needed an old gramophone, an old phonograph with a horn, and so... As stage manager, I was in charge of props, so I found a gramophone in a junk store in Hollywood, and it was a marvelous. I loved it, and it had some records. And then I noticed that some of the records were old comedy records, and I wanted to be a comedy writer. That was my goal in life, and so I started collecting records of. Not just comedy in the sense of situation comedy today, but songs of comedy songs and things. So, Van and Skank, the Two Black Crows, and people like that. And that started my collection, which is now I'm sitting in my radio studio and next to the castle, and there's a room next to it, which is a very large room, and it's got about 100,078 records in it. And it all started by a teenage kid who just couldn't stop collecting records. And so the records became playbills, and the playbills became posters, and the posters became buildings, and the buildings became castles, you know. So I guess I really born pack rat. But I've kidded about the fact that the year I was born was the year that the Palace Theater in New York stopped doing vaudeville, And so I think I was put on earth to resurrect vaudeville.
Gotcha.
I've been doing that for the last 8 decades. I haven't brought it back yet, but we're working on it.
Now, Milt, would you stay with me for about another 15 minutes? We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk about Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And your stars on the streets of Hollywood, or I should say the sidewalks of Hollywood.
I'd love
to. This is Donna Sebo. Milt Larson is my guest, the man, along with his brother, who started a most magical journey for the Magic Castle and much more. He didn't know what he was going for. We're coming back in just a moment talking about what happened in Las Vegas and what's going on today. So we'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. We're talking with the renowned Milt Larson. The Magic Castle is a dream that was fulfilled by him. His book is called My Magical Journey, The First 30,000 Days, and his website is magiccastle.com. And if you want to find out about the book, you can go /gift. Milt, there's no way. We don't even have enough time to cover a tenth of what's in your book about the story of your life.
Well, it took me 30,000 days to do it.
That's right. That's exactly what I think it would take. But I want to go forward to how you got into Caesar's Palace.
Oh, okay.
Because the poster, the information that you have in here is a history book. I mean, but it's gorgeous. The stories that are shared. And I know there's a very special lady. You get nicknamed her the Barracuda, Carol Marie, that helped you put this together.
She's amazing.
Carol, my hat's off to you. You have just done an incredible job with this book. But let's go to Caesar's Palace, because Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas is one of my favorite places to visit. I love the beauty of the architecture, everything that they've got there. And, of course, anymore, Las Vegas is almost, it's quicker to walk from point A to point B because traffic jams are just incredible there. But the magical empire at Caesar's, how did this happen? I mean, this is just incredible what was accomplished.
Well, actually, it's an interesting story there, as all stories are interesting. But the I was working with Caesars at one point, doing a couple of projects with Army Grant, who was we did about 4 TV specials together, and we did a thing for Caesar's Palace, and it wasn't Caesar's Empire, but I had a nice relationship with them. And one day after one of our awards banquets at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel, I was crossing the street and ran into the talent booker for Caesars, Alan Bregman, and I said, I've got this neat idea that I'd like to talk to somebody at Caesars about, could I set up a lunch or do something? This is crossing the street. And he said, yeah, let me give you a call. And so he did. And he said, set up a lunch tomorrow with Henry Gluck, who was the chairman of the board and a president of Caesars World, which was like 17 casinos all over the world. And so all of a sudden I'm having lunch with the top guy, you know, and also the president of Caesars Palace and a couple of other executives and Alan and me. And what I had was I had an idea for a game that had nothing to do with the Magic Castle. It was, I thought, a great game. And so we're having lunch, the usual thing. And Henry finally said, well, Mel, we're here to talk about something. What do you have in mind? And I said, well, I got this game. And Henry said, wait. He said, games? He said, it takes years to get a game in Vegas going. We thought you were going to talk about a Magic Castle. And I said, well, okay, let's talk about a Magic Castle. So at any rate, so we talked about that. And he said they're really interested in doing something, maybe with a castle-type thing. But he said the problem is, you know, the castle is very intimate. And I said, well, here's the thing, that in Vegas, all the shows are big, spectacular shows with, you know, Siegfried and Roy and Lance Burton and David Copperfield. They're huge shows. And I said, the castle is very intimate. It's close-up magic. And we have one theater where we do illusions these days, but it's basically there. And he said, well, figure out something where we could do something that would be the Magic Castle, but it would have to be on a bigger scale. But other than that, if you have any ideas, get back to us. So I said, cool. And on the way back that day to the castle, their offices were in Century City, which is part of Los Angeles, Beverly Hills, mm-hmm. Century City. And on the way back, I got this kind of bright idea about, you know, what if there was a hidden city underneath Rome, because Caesar's Palace always was based theoretically on the fact that, you know, everybody at Caesar's were part of the empire and Caesar's world. And it was always the classiest place in Vegas, or maybe second to the Desert Inn or something. But at any rate, it was very classy. So I got this neat idea for a hidden city underneath Rome, and Caesar would keep his greatest magicians in the world there to keep them away from other, other Asian, Marco Polo and those crazy people. So at any rate, I had the idea, but being a television comedy writer, you learn one thing in this business, and that is you just don't get an idea overnight. You wait about a week or so, like you've been working all that time, you know, and it's just what you do. If I was assigned to do a screenplay, I would wait for about 2 weeks to bring it in, because you don't want people to think you wrote it overnight, you know, that's not right. So I did that. And so I called him about a week later. I think I've got the answer to your thing. Could we have another meeting? And so I did. And I ad-libbed this whole story about Caesar had this city and it was under Rome. And how about if we could duplicate the city, underground city in Las Vegas, and build this place where magicians were very, very special and people would all be VIPs and all that sort of thing. And Henry loved it. This is the president, chairman of the board of Caesar's World. And he said, he loved the idea. He said, I wrote up about a four-page thing on it. And he said, Mel, he said, this is fascinating. You see, and his mind, this is a brilliant guy, and he saw exactly what I had in mind. And he said, we could do that. And I said, well, that's what I'm suggesting. And he said, okay. He said, here's the way it works. He says, we'll call you in about a day, and our business affairs people will call you, and we'll make some sort of a deal. And you now officially have a green light to build this thing. And I said, well, that's pretty neat. And we did, and $50 million later, they built the Caesar's Magical Empire. But the funny thing is about it is that my idea of a little intimate Magic Castle in Vegas turned into the biggest room, the center room in the Caesar's Magical Empire was the equivalent of a 10-story building, the ceiling.
Wow.
So it wasn't exactly intimate, but we did have, there were 12 intimate dining rooms, and each one only held 24 people, and so you multiply all that out, and it was what they wanted and I wanted, and we had a theater, and it was a gorgeous place. It lasted 9 years, which is a good run in Las Vegas, and the only reason it was doing very, very well, but then they wanted to build the Coliseum, and for people that know Las Vegas, that's a 6,000-foot capacity theater for Celine Dion, and unfortunately, part of it had to be built where the Empire was. So it had a good life, very popular, and unfortunately, it's not there anymore. But it was great fun and very profitable for me. But over the years, you know, Caesar's Empire is an example of it, but I love creating things. And I had mm-hmm. a theater in Santa Monica, the Mayfair Music Hall, which was a reproduction of a turn-of-the-century British music hall, and it was very successful. And it had a 10-year run, and then the Variety Arts Theater and Variety Center in downtown Los Angeles, and that was a 12-year run, and the Castle, of course, is a 50-year run. So I'm kind of doing that, and right now we're working on a project. You mentioned the Pantages Theater. Mm-hmm. Now, in Los Angeles, Pantages was a vaudeville circuit, and the first Pantages Theater was built in 1911 on Broadway in downtown Los Angeles. And the second one was also in downtown, and that was a huge movie palace. And then the current one, Hollywood Boulevard, is a gorgeous restored Pantages Theater. But the original 1911 theater is a project we're working on now to restore that. It's been closed for 35 years, and my wonderful, crazy idea of restoring things, that's one of our current projects.
And, well, Milt, you have got such an incredible history here. The book is funny. It is filled with photographs. It has names of people that are renowned in show business. Many of them I don't know, but there are so many that those that have the passion for the magic of Hollywood, there's even the names of people that are prominent today, like you have mentioned earlier. And I think more than anything else, it shows not only how one person's ideas can make a difference, and I can understand why Walt Disney was someone that you really admired, and I think he's still admired today by so many because the dreams that he had have been carried on, and the standards that he held were so great. But so have yours been. You're married to a wonderful woman, Arlene.
Oh, yes.
You still are active and doing things, and the show goes on. The Magic Castle in Hollywood is just a spectacular thing to see. The website for people to go and check out is themagiccastle.com. Themagiccastle.com, magic and castle, side by side.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to find out about the book, just hit a / and gifts, and you'll be able to do that. And, of course, you can get the book on Amazon. But the star for recognition on Hollywood, that's there, Milt and Bill Larson. Bill was Milt's brother, And the two of them traveled a phenomenal journey. The world of magic, the world of show business, the world of illusion. It's just an incredible, incredible story. And I think the kids of all ages, which you consider, and I quote from you that you and your wife married late in life. You have no children unless you count the 5,000 members of the
Yeah, we always like to say, but we don't have kids of our own. We have two wonderful dogs and 5,000 kids, and those are the members of the Magic Castle. You know,
that's right. So. You say they're all kids because magicians never grow old. Milt Larson, yeah. Thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been a joy.
It's been a great pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you. This is Donna Seabow. Milt Larson has been my guest. His book, My Magical Journey, The First 30,000 Days. Boy, I'll tell you, it is phenomenal as a read. Great to share with kids. Great history. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Seabow, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. To see more details, God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Seabow to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. It takes so many people to make this world an interesting place. And my guest is a man that, as an entrepreneur, as a dreamer, as a visionary, that's exactly what he did. Now, talking about entrepreneurs, we're going to be talking about an entrepreneur's journey on Monday. And I know taxes are due. Yes, yes, yes. By golly, that is something. What was it someone said a long time ago? And I mean centuries ago. Two things you can't escape. Death and taxes. No joke. That is the truth. I've never known of any civilization that hasn't had a tax structure. I remember reading about somebody in Roman history and how they got very, very angry and upset every single year because of the taxes they had to pay off to the Roman Empire. And then you go back to Mesopotamia, they found tax tablets even then. So it is, something that always in civilized society, the governments do that to their people. You check it historically. Well, we're going to be talking with Robert Lifton on Monday about an entrepreneur's journey. And then, have you ever had the showbiz bug where maybe you've wanted to do voiceovers? What are voiceovers? For those of you that may not know, those are people that do ads, commercials. They sometimes do bits in films. And this really became big in old-time radio. That was something that was very, very important. And then when the talkies came out, many times voices, singers' voices would be dubbed in. Maybe the actor or actress couldn't do what was necessary, so they used somebody else in the background, and it was dubbed in. Voiceovers, they're very popular. We're going to be talking with Stephanie Cicciarelli, and she is one that's done a lot of research on this, Voice Acting for Dummies. Yes, that's what we're going to be talking about. Then we're going to be traveling a journey of the shaman with Raven Caldera, Neolithic Shamanism. Have you ever heard of it? I hadn't. Shamanism I've heard of, but Neolithic? Well, we're going to find out what that is. And then the secret of social media rankings. This is very important because it is something that many people in business want to know why this is so significant. And then we are going to have a journey a week from today with Tamarack Song. It's Entering the Mind of the Tracker. Entering the Mind of the Tracker. Is this something that's useful today? Well, apparently it is. Native Americans were known for being expert trackers. They could move without even leaving a mark. Is this something that can be taught? Tamarack teaches people that have an interest in this and how you can pay attention to the world around you in a very unique way. So we've got a unique lineup next week, and I want you to know you're invited. Tell your friends and pass the word along. Donna Sebo here. Telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. If you're out looking for a job, regardless of what your age, you're very fortunate in today's world because there was a time when there was a great deal of discrimination, whether you were black, white, yellow, green, or purple, whether you were 24 or 64, size, all kinds of things came in as points of discrimination. Women were discriminated against, and there's just all kinds of stuff historically. Well, in today's world, you don't ask someone their age. And there was a guest, Vicki Oliver, and she put together a book on business etiquette. And one of the questions that came up was, if you're on an interview and someone wants to ask you personal questions, you have to have, and I'll use her word, moxie, to halt the inquisition. That's what she calls it. And simply answer the question in a nondescript way. And one of the images, not images, one of the stories she tells is about a relative of hers. It was her great aunt, Aunt Lynn. Now, one of the things they found out when her auntie died is that she had a different age written down on all of her documents. And it wasn't a mistake. Her auntie did this deliberately. Now, she said that in her memory, her auntie always just looked gorgeous. She was very attractive, and she said she had these long, springy black false eyelashes that she would put on every single day, and they usually fell off eventually into her eyes. And she had ice blue contact lenses. She had three husbands, and this is according to Vicki's description, legs that were chiseled like a rocket. And, in fact, her sister, Trixie, was a rocket. And one day, as a young woman, she asked her auntie her age. And she said, nobody knows, and they don't need to know. Now, when she asked her, she was a little girl, really, she said, how come you don't tell people the right age? How come my uncle, your husband, doesn't know your right age? And she just looked at Vicki, and she said, he can ask, but it doesn't mean I tell him. She said, well, what about at the office, auntie? Don't they ask at the office? She said, honey, I work in the fashion industry. So whenever Vicki is doing a seminar and someone asks about age, because there's such an obsession about this, she said, one of the people in her audience said, well, someone asked me my age on the phone. What should I have said? She said, well, why don't you just tell them you want to know why they're asking? Because it's really none of their business. And she would tell the story of her Auntie Lynn and say it's a good idea to keep people guessing. You don't need to let them know. Someone else asked her once, can you Botox your resume? Oh, I just love it. The reality is age, too many times, is a state of mind. And what you need to realize is that you can be old at 20, you can be young at 80. You can have an attitude about life, take care of yourself, And people, maybe when you're 70 years old, will say, what's your age? And you'll say, I really don't know. Because in your heart, you're a lot younger. But you need to remember that life is the living. Remember, always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. Tap dance your way through the weekend, through life, because this is a joyous journey, a joyous experience. Laugh, love, be happy. Live in the moment. This is yours right now. Have a fabulous weekend. Be back here same time, same place on Monday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.